From 100 Decisive Battles by Paul K. Davis. Teutoburger Wald, the Battle of Teutoburg Forest, AD 9. Forces engaged, Roman, the 17th, 18th, and 19th legions, plus auxiliary cavalry, totaling 15,000 to 18,000 men. The commander was Quintilius Verus. German forces, 20,000 to 30,000 men. The commander, Arminius Hermann. The importance of this battle: a Roman defeat marked the end of the empire's expansion into northern Europe, as both the German population and territory proved unconquerable. Historical setting: although Julius Caesar conquered Gaul for Rome in the 50s before Christ, he did little more than establish some garrisons along the eastern frontier to try to keep the German tribes at bay. The Germanic tribes were semi-nomadic and warlike, occasionally raiding across the Rhine River into Gaul. From the Marcomanni in the area of modern Austria to the Frisians on the North Sea coast, the tribes called no one other than the strongest military leader their master. This situation persisted until 12 BC, when Caesar Augustus ordered forces across the Rhine to protect Gaul and establish Roman hegemony. Under the leadership of Tiberius, Romans managed to cross the Rhine and stay the winter in AD 4, but they were in no way secure. Germany was unlike Gaul, in that there were no cities or even large towns for the Romans to capture and use as bases. Thus, Romans could make war on individual tribes, but could not establish themselves in an administrative center. Still, after a few years of campaigning, the Germans seemed to have accepted the Romans as their neighbors, if not as their overlords. The Romans, however, took the relative peace to mean that they were gaining the upper hand. Thus, it was that in AD 9, Quintilius Verus was assigned to the governorship of Germany. A veteran of both military action and the governor's post in Syria, he was primarily an administrator rather than a soldier. He tried to not only enforce Roman law, but to collect taxes. In a metal-poor society such as Germany, money for taxes was hard to come by and not willingly paid. That demand for taxes, so easily collected in Syria, plus the cavalier attitude that Verus exhibited towards the Germans, proved his undoing. On Verus's staff was Arminius, a young German of the Cheruscan tribe. He, like many other Germans, had hired himself out to the Romans for service in auxiliary forces and campaigns in southeastern Europe. As an officer in Roman service, he distinguished himself and was not only granted Roman citizenship, but granted the title of equestrian, a member of the upper classes. This impressed him little, but it did give him a first-hand view of the Roman way of life and the Roman way of war. Arminius chafed at the Roman administration attempting to govern his land and plotted to remove it. Although most other Germans felt the same way, and he therefore had a large population upon which to draw upon, he had trouble within his own family. He had courted Thusnelda, daughter of Segestes, a Cheruscan chieftain who served Rome. When Segestes rebuffed Arminius' request for marriage to Thusnelda, Arminius eloped with her. This infuriated his new father-in-law, who swore vengeance. Arminius, however, did everything he could to prove his loyalty to Verus, so any threat or warning that Segestes may relate, Verus refused to consider, thinking it merely retaliatory action over the loss of his daughter. Throughout the summer of AD 9, Arminius brought German leaders to Verus to ask his advice and settle their disputes. All of this flattened Verus's vanity and proved to him Arminius's devotion. Thus, when Verus began to gather in his camp on the Weser River in preparation for a return to winter quarters on the Rhine, he felt no compunction about having Arminius plan the move. As autumn approached, Arminius began laying his trap. On his direction, small revolts against Roman garrisons broke out. Arminius suggested that Verus alter his route back to the Rhine to put down these rebellions, a move that certainly would take little effort. Verus agreed. And now the battle. Verus had on hand three legions, all veterans of the wars against the Germans. They numbered some 15,000 to 18,000 men, including a force of cavalry. However, another 10,000 camp followers, mostly soldiers, family members, tradespeople, etc., were involved with the move as well. Their wagons, coupled with those carrying the soldiers' supplies and equipment, meant a long column. The route Arminius suggested wound through a heavily wooded region known as the Teutoburger Wald, or the Teutoburg Forest. It wound alongside Wiehan Ridge and Kalkries Mountain to the west, with a large swampy area to the north. Once the column was underway, Arminius left, supposedly to scout ahead. He immediately took command of all the tribes that he had rallied to his cause, between 20,000 and 30,000 men. It's impossible to determine his exact numbers because no contemporary German account exists. Suffice it to say, the motivation was there, but the supply sources were not, so the German forces probably waxed and waned through the campaign. Exactly where the fighting took place has been a mystery for almost 2,000 years. The accounts of Roman historians Tacitus and Cassius Dio significantly post-date the battle, and their accounts are pieced together from evidence discovered later by a punitive expedition led by Germanicus. What seems clear is that the route that the Romans took wound through terrain both forested and rugged, narrow defiles where traditional Roman tactics could not be used. To make matters worse, high winds and heavy rains made footing treacherous, and broken or cut branches often blocked their way. The Germans, armed primarily with short spears, harassed the column constantly, causing severe losses. When the Romans emerged into a clearing late on the first day, Varus ordered a camp established. Here the Romans erected their traditional fieldworks, a barricade and ditch around their position. This kept the Germans at bay, for Arminius made sure that no serious attacks were launched against this strong position. He had seen the Roman army at work often enough to know that they could hold such ground indefinitely and inflict serious casualties on an attacking force. The next morning, Varus ordered many of the wagons burned, hoping to speed the column. It had little effect. Once away from their field works and back into the wooded terrain, the Germans once again inflicted severe casualties on the Romans. This served to both demoralize the Romans and make their way already through their confused line of march even more confusing. It's not certain if the Romans withdrew to their earlier camp or if they tried to erect a new one that early evening. Either way, it was insufficient to stop the now aroused and confident German army. On what is thought to have been the final day of the battle, the Roman cavalry broke away from the main body but failed to reach safety. The press of German warriors proved too great for the encamped Romans to withstand. Varus apparently died by his own hand after receiving a serious wound. Recent excavations suggest that the battle took place more to the north of the traditionally accepted sites because discoveries of large amounts of Roman coins bearing Varus's portrait imply that this was the money used for paying his troops. Weaponry unearthed around what appears to have been a hastily erected earthwork mainly appears outside the rampart, giving the impression that the Romans made a last dash for freedom. Only a handful of soldiers escaped the carnage and reached the nearest Roman base at Aliso. By that time, the battle was over and the Germans were more interested in loot than in continuing combat. Those Romans that decided to surrender regretted their decision because the Germans sacrificed their prisoners to their gods. The results. Arminius managed to maintain some unit cohesion and press on towards Aliso, which he besieged. It withstood his assaults, however, but the garrison quickly abandoned the position upon Arminius's withdrawal. They retreated even farther westward to Vetera on the Rhine, where another legion was stationed. The Germans did not attack there. Arminius kept his position as combat commander for the western German tribes and led them against Drusus Germanicus's punitive expeditions 5 years later. Germanicus's four legions made some serious inroads into German lands during their 2-year campaign, but it was not a serious attempt at conquest and occupation. At Edis Daviso, east of Varus's last stand, Roman and German forces fought to a draw. Although the Roman army still maintained legendary discipline and valor, and the Germans marched them in a bravery and by then possessed of almost equal weaponry, much of which had been taken from the corpses at Teutoburger Wald. By that time, Augustus was dead and Tiberius ruled in Rome. You overruled Germanicus's request for another year's campaigning, during which the Roman general was convinced that he could have brought Arminius and the Germans to heel. When news of the defeat of three legions at Teutoburger Wald reached Rome, Augustus was thrown into a panic. He was convinced that there were insufficient Roman forces to stand against a concerted German push towards Italy. He immediately called for volunteers to defend the homeland. When few people responded, he instituted conscription to build legions of freed slaves and retired veterans. He dispatched Tiberius, his adopted son and heir, to shore up the frontier defenses. He need not have worried. Although Arminius had performed well in organizing the tribes for a single battle, he lacked the power to unite the tribes for either offense or defense. And the Germans returned to their isolationist ways, responding to Arminius only when Germanicus arrived. Gaul was threatened by no more than the occasional raids it had always suffered, and Italy was not threatened at all. The Roman defeat at Teutoburger Wald signaled the high-water mark of the Roman Empire in the north, and in spite of Germanicus launching his attacks, the Romans had given up on the concept of occupying the land east of the Rhine River. Even when fighting between the tribes flared up, the Romans did not take advantage of it. Nor did they try again when Arminius was assassinated in AD 21. The lack of strongholds and a roadwork network, the rugged countryside, the inability to live off of the land, and the warlike nature of the Germans all contributed to Tiberius's decision to leave Germany alone. The long-term consequences of that decision are felt to this day. North Central and Northeastern Europe remained free of Latin culture and law for several hundred more years. Not until the northern European tribes migrated into the Roman Empire, aiding in its downfall in the 4th and 5th centuries, did those populations adopt any major aspects of Latin culture. When they did, it was to enhance rather than replace their own mores. By missing the Roman civilizing influence, the Germanic languages survived. The populations migrated not only into the Roman Empire, but also farther west into Britain. And there the Anglo-Saxon culture took over, swamping most of the influence Rome had since the times of Julius Caesar. The Roman military suffered its first major setback in centuries. The legions that had built an empire from Spain to Syria were unable to conquer these barbarian tribes. As so many disciplined armies have learned throughout history, the need for coordination and unit cohesion serves them only in open country. The guerrilla tactics that the Germans employed paralyzed or scattered the Romans, as they could not stand together in ranks. The Romans did not adapt their tactics, but instead avoided Germany altogether. As Edward Creasy wrote, Roman fear disguised itself under the specious title of moderation. Arminius in modern times has come to represent German nationalism, in spite of the fact that he did not unify the tribes, but for a few temporary instances. In the late 19th century, a giant statue of him was raised on a hillside near the town of Detmold. Although his role in German unity may be overestimated, his defeat of Rome cannot be. Germany and Britain, at least, owe him a debt for their place in history.